Hello and welcome to another episode of the Non-Productive Show. I am going to be your host, Al, and I'm in studio with...
James.
Nate.
Shabazz.
Big Papa Shabazz.
Does anyone actually tune in for our introductions? It was like, God, I hope Frank's there.
No. Shabazz.
Well, Frank, I can tell you that I do. And the episodes that you're not there, I don't listen.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Probably not good production quality, but all right, cool. Thank you. What are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about the reboot of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, it's not a reboot.
No, that's not a reboot. But I mean, I'm excited about it. It's really cool. Mystery Science Theater is one of, I'm stuttering. It's so awesome. But, it's not a reboot.
No, it totally is. Because, it went away for a while and then it came back.
That's not what, that's a, not what reboot a reboot is.
It has totally new characters, though.
Yes, and that's also not how you define a reboot.
Crow's not new. Tom Servo's not new.
Also true.
Guy Spy's not new.
Tom Servo does have a new voice actor, though.
Okay.
Wait, all right, so before we can actually discuss this any further, it's clear that we're going to have to define what a reboot is.
Yes, so being the most film-educated person in the room...
Oh, right. My God.
Nerd!
Just going to just going to twirl my hipster beard and... make sure I'm wearing my plaid.
Hair.
Point is, we have a couple of topics here. We've got reboots, yeah. Right? We've got relaunches, we got remake.
Okay.
We have distant sequels.
I don't know how that relates at all, but we could go through it.
And adaptions.
Right. Okay. So we each one at a time. I think that's fair, and I think we could figure this all out once and forever on the internet.
All right. Well, let's start with an easy one.
All right.
An adaption.
That's not an easy one. But all right,
is it an adaptation or an adaptation?
It's totally an adaptation, so maybe the most film-educated guy here should shut the hell up. For our purposes, because I think all of these can be considered adaptations, right? But I guess for our purposes, how do we want to define it?
I would say a significant change in medium. So book to movie, TV show to movie.
All right, that's cool.
Comic to movie, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
or
that's fair.
Vice versa.
I think there has to be a singular sort of source material that it's branched off from.
Okay, I could see that too. So there's more artistry in adaptation.
Yeah.
You have to be I'm Christopher Columbus and only my imagination can bring the Harry Potter universe to life.
That's not right.
I don't know why. So I don't know what Christopher Columbus sounds like.
And I don't know why he directed that Harry Potter.
He absolutely
did. He directed the first two.
He didn't just found America. He also directed amazing films.
Wow, what a man, I guess.
I believe he goes by Chris Columbus.
Doesn't matter.
The director.
I refuse. That's what the Knights of Columbus want you to believe.
1931, the Bela Lugosi Dracula would be an adaptation of Bram Stoker's novel.
Correct. Okay. And my argument would be that... Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992 would be a
remake, right?
Possibly, right? Because my feelings are, although I'll make the argument here. See, it's either an adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula, and since that's on the tin, I guess that's what it really is. But you can make the argument that a remake is actually a recreation of an original source material that you're actually honoring. So for me, it would be any classic film that gets remade many years later. And, we honor the original film. The Psycho remake is a good example because it's crazy. It's an extreme remake. It's a scene by scene, shot by shot remake.
I actually have a perfect example of that.
All right.
And that would be the Les Miserables films.
Really?
There was one with Gerard Depardieu. In the late 90s, I believe.
Yeah, I remember.
Which
this
was a adaptation of the play.
The book. Not
book.
The play.
All right.
Whereas the Les Miserables movie with Hugh Jackman just a few years ago
is from the play.
Is an adaptation of the play.
Oh, wow.
But it's not a remake of the film.
That's really interesting.
That's cool. So I guess we should probably just put it out there. If it's an adaptation from a different medium, then we're just calling it an adaptation. If it's actually one medium to the other, if it's a film that is a remake of a film, we'll call it a remake.
Yeah.
All right, but then what the hell is a reboot?
I feel like, all right, if you're asking me personally,
No one was asking you personally.
All right, fine.
But answer anyway.
Well, and I'm going to answer anyway. For me personally, reboot is basically anytime the franchise kind of comes back in a, and like, I think there's a lot of different ways that can happen. Then I guess you could say something like Battlestar Galactica works as a reboot because it's coming back and redoing things that are in no way really connected or similar to the original.
See, that's why I don't think MST3K is a reboot. I agree with you on Battlestar Galactica because I think the core material on what that is like they kept it. Oh, a big spaceship, they're flying, they're fleeing from Cylons, but it's not fundamentally connected to any other source. MST3K is a continuation of the original series. It's just there's a new host now, a new person trapped in the satellite of love.
Frank, I think you touched on the key word there. It's continuity.
Uh-huh.
Where a reboot is like Battlestar Galactica, something where there is no continuity from the first one to the second one, the first version to the second version. Mm-hmm. They basically completely erased the history and started over from scratch. With the main idea.
Right.
Well, so then I have a question. Where mm-hmm. does these vague continuities fit in? Trying to think of a good example. So Mad Max, right? I mean, there's assumed continuity, but you've got an entire new cast. It sort of takes place in the same world.
So it's a sequel, right?
But it's very aspectly different. You know what I mean? Like, you can look at... If you look at the original Mad Max and Mad Max Fury Road, these are very different films starring different people... They don't feel connected at all.
And they're directed differently, too. Let's not forget that. These are stylistically extremely different films.
Even though they're by the same person.
Yeah, I don't agree that there's such a difference there. Although I guess there could be some. James Bond is another good example where, like, whenever there's a new Bond, there's a chance that it changes. But it doesn't really... if it's a movie that's a sequel to the others, but it's significantly different, doesn't really address it. I get like a distant sequel or like a loose
sequel.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a good word for it, but we'll call it... just a sound we made.
Maybe is that what we were going for with relaunch?
No. Yes. So I think MST3K is a relaunch. I think it's like the Star Trek The Next Generation, like anything where like you have a existing continuity that stopped for a period of time mm-hmm. and then got picked up again and honors the original continuity, but doesn't just try to recreate it. That is a relaunch.
I mean, I can see where one would think that. But for me personally, when I think of Star Trek The Next Generation, I don't think of that as just like, oh, we're doing Star Trek again. It's like, no, we're redefining what Star Trek is. We're coming to the table with a whole bunch of new ideas, new crew, new style, everything. And we're like, that sounds like reboot to me.
You know what the difference is? They honor the previous material. They say all that Star Trek stuff that you watched before, that still happened. These guys in this new movie or this new show, they remember that stuff. That's part of their history. This is new. Things have changed and we've moved on, but that's different.
All right. Now that we got that out of the way, what makes one of these thingamajigs good?
Well, I think honestly, it has to be a loyalty. This is going to sound like so corporate shill of me to say, but I think there has to be some semblance of a loyalty to the brand. I think you have to have some understanding of the thing that you're holding. And even, like, going back to Battlestar Galactica, even though you're remaking that almost from the ground up, it's still recognizable Battlestar Galactica. Like, it wouldn't be something else. If I sat up there and said, like, well, we're making Battlestar Shemactica, then, like people would look at that and be like, no, I Cylons, Red Eye, like, yeah. I know where this is going. All right. Yeah, and it made sense. And you could see where things sprouted from that idea. And again, going back to Star Trek Next Generation, again, there was loyalty to that brand, holding on to all of the previous history and honoring that previous history, even bringing some of the old actors back on for guest appearances, showed semblance of like loyalty to brand, honoring the brand. And I think that's a huge part of what's important to it.
That's kind of the difference between a reboot or a remake and a ripoff with the Battlestar Shmamactica.
I mean, I guess, like, Transmorphers. Like, I guess to a certain extent, Transmorphers
Asylum
did.
Films.
GoBots.
We're not getting into that argument.
Came first.
We're not going to get into that argument. Yeah, I think for the most part, that's fair to say that if you're honoring the source, that's probably you have a better chance of doing any of these well if you honor your source. I think that's not exactly true for all of these things. I think in some cases, like, distancing yourself from the source is definitely what you want to do, especially when we get more in the reboot territory and the people who are like, this sucks so bad, this time we've got it right.
I mean, I guess I'm of like a weird opposite opinion of this. I don't, even particularly with adaptions, like, really don't slave yourself to the source material. I guess there's a part of you that should always want to like please the fans and things like that. But if you have a vision, if you have a way that you think you can make this good, you will be way better off, I think, creatively creating something new out of what was there than being beholden to it. For example, if we're looking in the adaption territory, The Godfather is a good book, but The Godfather 2 is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this rule is a little less apparent with pop culture, but I can never get behind the argument, well, that was a great movie, but it wasn't Power Rangers, or it wasn't Star Wars, or it wasn't this. And I can never get behind that argument.
I'm curious if you'll have that same opinion when it comes to something that isn't sourced in a different medium. If it is like a remake or a relaunch, if you'd feel as strongly about them trying something new, maybe come up with a couple examples. Actually, maybe we should all do that. Maybe let's go around and each talk about an example of a project we think did really well.
I'll be really obscure. I think the Looney Tunes show was a great example of that. I think that showed loyalty and ingenuity.
Which one? Lunatics Unleashed?
No.
Get
Wait, what is
here.
Lunatics Unleashed?
Oh, it's clearly the best reboot of the Looney Tunes franchise.
Is that the mid-2000s
movie?
No. It was the mid-2000s series of edgy, grim, dark superheroes. They had black, like, leather
outfits. Oh, gosh,
this
sounds awful.
And they fought a bunch of aliens, and they all had different names and everything. They just looked like them. It was very weird.
They weren't supposed to be the Looney Tunes characters. Though,
they were not. They just looked identical to
them. Yeah, they were like the future descendants of them.
It was
something.
Like a combination of Captain Planet, but like grim, dark, and edgy, and with a bunch of furries.
Looney Tunes 2099.
How dare you suggest that?
No, I wasn't suggesting that. I was suggesting the Looney Tunes show, which came out like about a couple years ago. And it was sort of the Seinfeld version of the Looney Tunes. Where
the Looney
cartoons
Tunes
about nothing?
Yeah.
The Looney Tunes sitcom, Bugs is living in an apartment, Daffy lives
Daffy
with
is
him.
His roommate.
It's on Cartoon Network. It's like mid-2000, 2010s, like that.
Yeah, 2010.
Yes,
yeah.
I love that show.
That was a great show, and it's because it had both the things that we were talking about. It had a loyalty to its brand, which was all those characters were recognizable as those characters, and it did something new with them. It didn't just have them going through rabbit season, duck season.
Although they referenced
Although
it,
they
and
did,
they did
yeah,
those,
they did.
Yes.
Yeah, but they went through it, and they put them into much more realistic situations. Not realistic. I mean, they put them in sitcom situations, really.
Right.
And it worked, because you had these very vibrant characters in kind of, like, sort of mundane-ish kind of problems, and they would, like, go so over the top with it. It was hysterical.
Yeah, it was great. I might give this podcast to you. This you may have led with the perfect example of both honor the original source material and then do something new with it. That may be it. We may have to cut this part out and put it at the end, because everything else is going to be the only problem would be if people have no experience with it, or if they disagree with us and then they're wrong. Anybody else have something?
What about John Carpenter's The Thing?
Oh, yes. What about John Carpenter's
The Thing is an incredible movie. In fact, one of the best horror movies. In my personal opinion, John Carpenter's best film. That's a remake. That's a remake of an old monster movie.
Yeah.
That's, you know, fine.
The Thing from Another World, if memory serves.
Mm-hmm. The Thing from Another World is a fine B-era monster movie.
Right.
But John Carpenter's The Thing is an amazing movie.
Right. And
that's a straight-up remake.
But what makes it amazing? I don't know if it's a straight-up remake.
It might not be.
Yeah,
no,
I don't think so.
All right. So that's what makes it better, is John Carpenter brought himself to the movie in a way.
That's right. Because he cast himself as The Thing. What are you saying, you film school reject?
No. I don't think it was in my example before. It's not a slave to the source material, which was kind of this thing that was just okay. It really took something and made something better out of it.
I could think of, like, maybe on one hand, all the references from The Thing to The Thing in Another World. It's enough. There are connections.
You could say it's a sequel in its own weird way.
You might even be able to say sequel or remake, but in reality, it is a whole new version of this film.
Oh, God.
Except for our definition of adaptation, I'd almost call it that, right? Because it is modifying the source material so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is an interesting remake. Reboot. Actually, it may be the first reboot we've talked about so far. It's like, take the bare materials, Alien crash lands in the Arctic, and things happen, and then turns it on its head. That's really cool. All right, I agree. Very good. Next, anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, I've got one that's maybe a little harder to find. I want to call it a reboot, but I'm not sure because it's the same sort of material. The current My Little Pony sort of franchise that's going on is so one that I want to talk about because it's a franchise and it's rebooted itself five times now, and we're on the fifth one. Well, sixth, arguably. I'm not going to get into numbers, actually. That'll get weird. But it's rebooted itself at least four times now. And I want to call that a reboot, even though it's sort of the same material. Like, there's a show, but some of the generations don't have shows. They have other media, like books or games or toys and things. So the entire franchise itself is sort of remaking itself every time.
Yeah, I definitely could see this as a reboot. But, like, what draws you about, and are you saying that Friendship is Magic is your favorite, or or you really respect it?
I guess it's actually really difficult to say. I mean, I cannot say which in general is my favorite, because if I'm going for franchise, there's parts from each one I like, whether we're talking about the toys or the books or the supplementary material. If we're talking about just the show, I mean, easily the current one is the best one. It has the best production values, even considering the time it was made. And it actually is genuinely made to be educational and emotionally educational for children, whereas some of the older ones were just sort of an hour and a half special toy on TV commercial to sell toys. Yeah. I mean, I like the original 1984 My Little Pony movie. I like it. It was good. It was cool and action-filled, and a demon tried to turn a bunch of horses into smaller demons to pull his chariot.
You're thinking of John Carpenter's My Little Pony.
I really wish I was. It was really cool, but at the same time, was it educational? Was it valuable? I'm not sure, because it was definitely at its core a toy commercial, just one that I liked. But I think Friendship is Magic really took it to a new level and tried to take the parts of the thing that were enjoyable, of My Little Pony that were enjoyable, the horses, but it completely changed the world. Like, in the original My Little Pony, humans exist. There are children. They sold dolls of young girls that you could play with your horses with. They lived in stables and things. And in the current, that doesn't happen. There's no humans in this world.
And significantly less weird.
Yeah. Significantly less weird.
There's no humans in this world. Are you sure you're not thinking of John Carpenter's My Little Pony? Can we crowdfund this?
It's already done. Check YouTube.
I would really like to see that, actually. You think not to talk about
no.
it?
No, that's clearly a Ridley Scott movie.
Oh, all right.
But there's a lot of differences between it that make it really interesting. And the ways that parts of it have been honored, the reasons why people liked it, with mostly the aesthetic and the sort of creative things that were going on, but giving it an entirely new life with new stylistic direction and with a new goal in mind. Instead of just purely being a toy commercial, it did set out to be emotionally educational, where it, you know, it's supposed to have actual lessons in the show that mean something, not just don't bite your friends. It really would suck if you turned out to be adopted by a king one day. That would be weird. Those are real lessons from the original show. I can pull them up. They weren't great. New ones have actual sort of value in it and wanted to be a valuable formative experience for girls. And that makes it completely different.
I'm going to say, and I almost would say that the new show, at least Friendship is Magic in this iteration, has proven its value. I mean, at how many times on this show, on this podcast, did we used to say Friendship is Magic? It was a part of the cultural zeitgeist. I watched 2 seasons. It was good.
I've watched 6.
I just don't have a lot of time.
The movie's come out. It's going to be good.
Speaking of magic, Pete.
I'll take what might be a controversial point and say that Star Trek, or New Trek, as fans have been calling it.
The Kelvin timeline?
Yeah, the Kelvin timeline. That works. Because they very inconsiderately just named the new movie Star Trek and gave us no way of differentiating. But I think that's actually a very good way of how to do a reboot / sequel type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a cheat because it straddles those genres.
It could even go into what we defined as relaunch. Definitely. It could go into even remake if you're talking about the sequel to that, Into Darkness.
Yeah.
Oh,
that,
God,
that
what
was
a mess.
That remade. That was part of a reboot that remade part of the thing it was rebooting. It's very weird, but I was very much a fan of the way they handled it. It's watching that movie felt I was angry at it as a Star Trek fan. I was like, this is not Star Trek. This is not the kind of movie I want to see. This is an action movie that you put the Enterprise in. And I did not like that until spoiler alert here if you haven't seen the 2009 movie, which is now almost 10 years old.
Wow.
But
good Lord.
When Leonard Nimoy shows up as Spock from the original Star Trek universe and explains that this is a parallel universe and no, these aren't the characters that you actually know, but those characters that you know still exist in another universe. And there is this connection. That little bit of magic wand hand wavium actually saved the movie for me because it made it okay to completely shift the tone of the movie.
So you're the type of person I hate.
Wow.
Why do you hate me?
That annoys the crap out of me. The fact that you can't like separate yourself from something just a little bit to see it as individual from already pre-existing material, that a director or someone creating this story knew that the fan base was going to be so difficult to deal with that he had to attempt to put a bit of hand wavium in the movie so that he could turn around and be like, I didn't ruin your old characters. I didn't ruin, which to me doesn't ever make any sense. If the reboot or the thing that these other people like is different, that's fine. That other stuff still exists and is still enjoyable. I know there's a great argument Frank has about how that's not entirely true, but...
Oh, me too.
But, you know, on a base level, I feel like it is. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's difficult because there was no way we were ever going to get another Star Trek that was not this big blockbuster, you know what I mean?
I don't know that we needed a new Star Trek with Kirk and Bones and Spock.
Mm-hmm. That's true too.
If you wanted to do a complete tonal shift where these characters are behaving differently, then don't call them Kirk, Bones, and Spock.
I guess, but
Wesley could be a captain now, huh?
Sure,
but at the same,
how about Sulu?
But at the same time, Wesley. At the same time, I have to worry going and creating or adapting a material that I'm so unfree to do what I need to do because there's going to be this group of rabid people out there who's just going to tear it down no matter what. Uh-huh. That's infuriating.
Believe it or not, I totally understand what you're saying, James, and I agree with it to a certain extent. I see what both Pete and James are saying here, but I will say that those people who are saying this are the fans you're allegedly creating material for. So there is a point where, like, you know, alienating the fans does work against your best interests, and that is, like, we're going to bring up a whole list of things where it's like people creating comic book movies that are for new comic book movie fans and not for comic book fans. That's a conversation I really don't want to get into. There's a lot of gatekeeping there and bull crap, but I can understand why somebody would have an issue with it. And I think the important thing is that what Pete said was that it heightened his enjoyment significantly, right? That there was this extra effort J.J. Abrams put in to connect it. For me, I think at the time it pulled me out. I didn't like it as much, but I no longer remember why.
My thing is, I'm like super excited about having new interpretations of existing characters. Mm. That's something that excites me. When I go and see like a bland adaption where it's just like,
it's this again.
It's just so book to page, right? You know?
Almost every Robin Hood adaptation or
version. What are we bringing different to the table here? You know, I'm in kind of the same way Pete's like, well, I don't want to bring Bones and Spock back, call him something else. And like, I wouldn't want to bring Bones and Spock back at this point if you were just recasting them and they were going to play the exact same thing,
right?
You know,
and they didn't, to be their
no
their
they
defense.
Didn't
yeah
I'm curious here, James. So like, are you saying, like, I want to fully understand what you're with the grasping your argument here, which is that you don't like it to be, you're not saying don't be loyal to the source material. You're saying just do something different with it.
You're saying don't be a slave to the
source. Don't be a slave. Right.
Correct. That doesn't necessarily mean don't be loyal.
He actually said don't be unfree, which is what he said earlier in this podcast. Right. Listen to it. I'm so unfree. There's a word for that, but we're good. Yeah, continue.
Yeah, like obviously, like, you know, like if people recognize things about Star Trek, like you're not going to be like the Enterprise. Oh, instead it's a flashing light bulb or something. I don't know. Like you're not going to
be almost
like,
lens flare.
Yeah, really. Jeez.
You're not going to be like super crazy, but like the My Little Ponies in Friendship is Magic don't look like they reinterpreted the whole style of My Little Pony for that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's good in my mind. I mean, you're the big fan here, but I like that sort of reimagining in depth.
And I agree with you, but at the same time, I'm going to 100% say that, yeah, I think that Abrams needed to put that in his film in order to make what he wanted to do work. Like, these weren't, if he was going to make the style.
Excellent, done by Al. I agree. I was disagreeing with him until I agreed with him in one sentence.
There you go. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, he needed to put that in because at the end of the day, like, it's
what
like,
he wanted to do. Yeah.
He wanted to make this thing, and he could do that. He found a way. He said, like, I want to tell this story with Kirk's bones and all these other characters we recognize, but I want to tell it my own way. How do I do that? Well, I change what happened. I go back in time. I come with a reason as to why all this went crazy. And then there it is, my Star Trek
wonderful
movie.
Impression.
You know, I mean, that works there, but you got to say there's other similar movies like the Power Rangers reboot that just came out. Reboot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hard reboot. That has nothing, almost zero connection with the original series. And I just got finished, like, going, blasting through the original series. Like, it is so dissimilar. And yet, it's still really popular with old Power Rangers fans.
Yeah, I don't think I saw their guinea pig master once in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Thank God they cut out Snarf.
Snarf.
Not sure what's happening.
Oh, God.
No. Anyway. Snarf was with the Thundercats.
This is going to be an extended cut of this podcast.
I'm pretty sure it was the same thing.
For Patreon subscribers, you get to hear this probably two-hour conversation between Pete and Nate about whether Snarf was in Power Rangers. But you only if you chip in at the $1,000 level.
There you go.
But, I mean, I would say, like, it wasn't unrecognizable as Power Rangers. They held true to what I feel is the core of Power Rangers, which is we're grabbing some teenagers with attitude. You do some martial arts, give them giant robot dinosaurs to dinosaurs. I'm doing quotation marks here.
Right.
There's a mammoth in there.
And a saber-toothed tiger.
And a pterodactyl.
All right. Settle down, folks. God, what is this?
But, yeah, it held true to its source material, held true to what actually was the brand and
brand.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what, that's what mattered, and it wasn't so far removed that it was unrecognizable. It was there.
We
man.
Agree
Power
on
Rangers was there.
One level we agree that at very little, at very base, there's got to be some sort of spiritual connection to what you're trying to recreate in some way.
Yeah.
Right, there's got to be some link to it. Some of us want, it seems like some of us appreciate stronger connections than others, and some of us want more freedom. I don't feel like those are helpful rules. Honestly, I feel like if we gave this to, like, aspiring filmmakers and just handed it to them, they would be like, okay, I feel like I did this. Because I want to talk about one that is,
what's a helpful rule,
everything,
Frank?
Everything.
Go on.
Planet of the Apes.
Oh,
Planet of the Apes
gosh.
Has sequels. Has sidequels, has loose sequels, has remakes, have relaunches, reboots, and it's all over the place.
You're not wrong. Oh my
right?
God. Yeah.
And all of them, I think, in some level, do hit the core materials of what Planet of the Apes is about. They're the
except
planet.
For the Dukes of Hazzard TV series.
Dukes of Hazzard meets Planet of the Apes?
No, the Planet of the Apes TV series was basically Dukes of Hazzard on the Planet of the Apes.
It was. You're not wrong.
It was the Dukes of Hazzards with Boss Gorilla.
My end of the sentence is that there is a Planet of Apes and that their interaction with humanity. So, like, that is in all of them. But some of them really good. Some of them are like, And then I think it depends on the person. Because, like, if you really like the crappy aspects of the original Planet of the Apes, you may really enjoy some of the really weird side quills or the TV show. But if what pulls you in is the great storytelling or the, like, whatever, the 60s, 70s era sci-fi, you may look at the Tim Burton film and be like, this is garbage.
I was going to say, but not the Tim Burton film. No one likes the Tim Burton film.
I think Planet of the Apes is a great example, particularly because...
Of what? Of terrible filmmaking.
No, of all of these things.
Yeah, that's what I said. You didn't say that. I said that.
You said that.
Frank said that.
But I will commonly go to, if people are asking me, well, what do you think right now is doing, you know, restarting their franchise or a reboot correctly?
Rise of the Planet.
And it's 100%. It's the original Rise, you know, it's Rise?
Rise
of the Planet
of the
Apes?
Rise of the Planet
that was the first
of the Apes
one?
Was the most recent... The start of the most recent series.
This was a movie that didn't look like it had any real connection to the series. Mm-hmm. That I walked in there thinking this was going to be a terrible movie. Right? It looked awful. But despite that, had amazing reviews. So I went. And I was blown away because it's a movie that, despite being, other than having an ape and a human...
On a planet,
really has no connection.
Which, to be fair, is Dunson checks in.
There you go.
No, I get this. Yeah, definitely. But my point
spiritually,
is...
Spiritually, you
know? So, fine. That's great that you liked Rise of the Planet of the Apes because it fits your definition of great, right? Because it does, doesn't
right,
it?
Right, like, it does.
I'm not going to let this be where James wins.
Wow.
Because right? It connects to, like, the very fundamental things. We all agree on that. But is it everything? Is it complete? I would argue that maybe it is. Maybe calling the main character Caesar. Maybe the fact that it is a prequel and this kind of teases that this is why we get the Charlton Heston movies that come out afterwards kind of allows, like Pete had, that doorway to say, this is canon.
Right.
That's that weird thing that a lot of people have where it's like, is this canon? Is this a canon thing?
Do we
care? Is this real?
Did I waste my time?
Some people do. And I think that's part of what made that movie good, other than the fact that it was a good movie. You know?
Right.
I feel like maybe we should... Do we want to hash out some more examples? Or maybe things that don't work? I don't really know what we want to do.
I feel like maybe it's not a bad idea. Because what I was saying before is, like, it doesn't... To be a good reboot, you don't have to just be a good movie. Because we alluded to this before, earlier on. And I feel like we're talking about Psycho, the remake of Psycho.
Can I ask real quick? I just want to clarify what you just said. You said that to be a good remake, it doesn't have to be a good movie?
No, it doesn't just have to be
a good
movie. So it has to be more than a good movie.
Yes. Correct.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
You have to be more free to be a good movie.
At the same time, you're also less free.
Less free to be a bad
movie. Because
you're
constrained by not being a bad movie.
Complete jokes. There we go. But no, like, because Psycho structurally is a good movie. I mean,
I would argue, but
it in front of somebody, they're not going to look at it like this was trash.
In but,
like,
theory, it would.
I would
to.
Argue, but
no, in theory, it would almost theory. Have to be if you liked Psycho. You know, yeah. if you like
the original Psycho, you'll probably like if you. Watching the first, like, black and white Psycho, like, without, you know, just, like, if no one had ever seen it before, most people like that movie. And if I were to erase their minds of that film and, like, have them watch the remake, they'll probably be like, oh, they'll probably have a similar reaction.
Right.
Now...
It's a good argument.
But it's still, like, a horrible freaking remake because they literally shot Psycho again. Despite it being a decent film... It's not a good remake. It's not a good reboot of the franchise.
I understand what you're saying.
For those of you who don't know, the Psycho we're referring to is a shot-for-shot remake of the original Psycho.
Yeah, a 90s shot-for-shot remake.
I forget who did it.
With the guy from Wedding Crashers. I don't remember his name.
Vince Vaughn was in it.
There we go.
Yeah.
I think that...
Which is problematic in and of itself.
That comes back to my point. If you're not willing to do something new and different with your movie, why are you doing that at all?
Al, are you just going to hand the win to James? Is that what you were trying to do?
No, I'm not!
All
right.
I think it's an interesting exercise in filmmaking, attempting a shot-for-shot remake.
Is, yeah.
I think it's very interesting on a... just a technical level, as an artistic standpoint, examining what makes a film good. Like, can you just immediately try and exactly duplicate a film and still have it come out as good as the original? And at the same time, there's also a benefit of taking the masterwork from before and updating the technological capabilities that you have. Do I think it's always the best way to do things? No. But there is value to it. Maybe not as much value as reimagining it.
Yeah.
But there is value.
Yeah.
James.
If you guys are looking for a way to defeat me, I can defeat myself because there is one movie.
No.
Go ahead.
No.
No, I want to know.
A win.
I can't let you have that either. I'm sorry.
It's still getting a win. Let's hear. And I'll shoot down you shooting yourself down.
Well, there's one movie that I have a problem with, and the only level I can say
you
is
only
that
you have one problem.
I can only think of one movie that I have a problem with where I can only, I mean, it's not a good movie, but I can quantify my major argument to it as it's just not the source material. It just doesn't honor it in a way that makes any sense.
Right.
And that would be an adaption of actually a favorite novel of mine, which is The Giver, which they made into just another teen, you know, dystopian error movie right around the time of the Hunger Games craze.
Now, this would be one case where you did use dystopian error.
When you misspoke era,
I think you got it inadvertently correct.
Yeah, I would agree.
It was a dystopian error in but this case.
But it's just a movie that just has no, it just doesn't even feel like it tries to quantify the meaning of the original film or the original source material. And that, to me, comes down to it doesn't do the things that I needed it to do to satisfy me. You know, its use of sound or black and white or, you know, the appropriate story beats. It just doesn't do any of that, you know, and it's an okay movie as a whole. It's but it's something that I can only say I hate because I love the source material so much. And that's it. I really think there's only that one thing.
Don't worry. I am currently looking up terrible remakes.
Find a reboot for me.
Yeah. Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
All right, Clash of the Titans was not a shot-by-shot remake. It had a whole new story arc that they added. There was a lot of weird stuff between the gods and the family relations between everybody.
Which was so weird, because Zeus was kind of the villain, but then also the, like, mentor at the end, like, yeah, oh, he was also the person succeeded, my son.
He needed to be saved by his son. It was like this buddy cop movie. It was garbage.
None of that was in the original?
And none of that was in the original.
What did they replace it with? Or what was in the original? A Clockwork Owl?
Yeah, so, like, it had the very basics of the name and the spirit and the whole surface level of connection with the original film
and Pegasus,
but it just has no connection. But like, they took a lot of experiments with it and they failed utterly.
Yeah,
just like your theory fails. I'm just to be personally, like, you're right, but it's not like it's not enough just to experiment. You can't just swing for the fences. You can, you know, hit so far off that you just annoy everyone. I also think Planet of the Apes, Tim Burton, Planet of the Apes is another one. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, although people will argue that, you know, it was a remake of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, though they claimed it was wholly different. There is, like, the landscape of film is littered with the corpses of these crappy attempts to recreate movies that are not.
So I'll tend to appreciate a film like a Clash of the Titans more than I'll appreciate, say, something like Psycho.
Yeah, well, Psycho is a rare exception.
All right.
That has never happened before or since.
Then something that's an uninteresting remake.
Yeah, that's fair. Like the Giver. We can put Giver in there.
Like the various King Kongs.
Yeah. Like,
or Dracula's. Well,
the new King Kong was supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah.
But the new King Kong was not a remake. Yeah. It was more of a reboot.
I guess that's
true.
Because
they actually tried to do something very different story-wise. This was set in the post-Vietnam era.
Well, no, let's not use terms new King Kong. So the 2005 Peter Jackson King Kong, remake of the 37 King Kong. And then you got Skull Island, which is a different thing. Did you think that the remake King Kong, Peter Jackson's, was good?
I thought it was kind of boring. It's just long. It's very long.
So we've talked about a couple of things that we do like, and I kind of want to talk about something I didn't like. And it's, you know, Transformers is a franchise I'm really passionate about, and it's rebooted itself and remade itself many, many times.
Oh,
there's
God,
so many iterations of Transformers.
Yeah.
But the movies are just not great. I have no idea who they're marketed to or how they keep making their money.
And how do they keep making so much money?
It boggles the mind because Transformers fans hate it. People who don't like Transformers hate them. I really have no idea who goes and sees these movies and who goes in such huge numbers. But as a remake, as an adaption of the original source material, they fail. Michael Bay has even said that because he wanted to create a completely new interpretation of Transformers, he didn't watch the original series or any of them at all. He didn't look at any of the series Bibles. He just took the concepts that existed in pop culture. And I can actually sort of see where that comes from. I think there could be value in that, but maybe not in a multi-million dollar blockbuster movie. Maybe not, you know?
Transformers always throws me because it's like, you're making all this money, so you're clearly doing something right, but I hate everything you're doing. But what I do like about Transformers is this, and I'm glad Nate brought it up, because it
totally craps on James's stupid theory of it just has to vaguely relate to the original source material. An experiment. Screw you, James. You, if you ever were a filmmaker, you'd just be making billions. But I mean, everyone would hate you. Except for the people who loved you, clearly, because they give you billions.
I guess I'm okay with that. You
think about that.
Oh my God, did I just say I'm okay with being Michael Bay? And you cry.
Corporate sellout.
Actually, I really do like Michael Bay, but I'm not sure about Transformers movies.
They're not good. Yeah. They're
Pain and Gain and Bad Boys.
They are a nightmare of a film that doesn't have any connection to the original.
It's baffling.
The characters have no basis the thing is, because I can directly compare them to other adaptions. Like, you can see the other 35 Optimus Primes that exist and how they are based in the same concepts that character originated from, and how none of those concepts, other than he's the leader and he's the red and blue guy, make him Optimus. And those aren't the things that make that character or Transformers Transformers. They took all of the things that made it Transformers and just kept the transforming robots, which isn't what makes it Transformers, because there's a bunch of different shows with transforming robots.
If you are a Transformers film fan and would like to finally explain this to us, please leave a lengthy comment we probably won't mark for spam.
I can vaguely make the attempt to explain this, but I think that it attempts to go for the lowest common denominator of, hey, let's just watch some like schlock.
Right.
And we'll...
Robots blowing things up.
Yeah, exactly. But I know another franchise where that was attempted, and where they went for a lowest common denominator for a different audience, and that was with the Gem film. The Gem and the Holograms film.
All right.
Where they attempted to make a stereotypical, I'm a teen woman trying to make myself in the world, and, you know, everyone, like, make a band, and everyone's going to get together, and I got
caught
really
gotta
on
see
the
Al's fist, like his arm hook. Oh, golly gee, Willikers.
He wants to punch this movie in the face as much as I do.
Yeah, it's they tried to make the Britney Spears movie that came out in the aughts. Like,
Glitter?
Yeah.
No.
Except
that was Mariah Carey.
Yeah. That was Mariah Carey, you're right. But yeah, they
oh, now that's going to bother me. What was the Britney Spears, Crossroads?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
I
my
think
God.
So.
Yeah, jeez.
Wait, no, that was Ralph Macchio.
Oh, my God.
That was
wow.
another Crossroads.
I think he was in both. Oh,
that'd be awesome. Continue with your stupid point about 80s movies.
But I'm just
80s cartoon series.
But I'm just saying, like,
yeah, no,
once again, you're trying to take an 80s cartoon series, you try to market it to the lowest common denominator of people who watch movies. And in one instance, it made billions. In another instance, in Gem and the Holograms, everyone went to that movie and like, this is garbage.
Right. They found themselves. Right.
They did. Yeah.
I do think it was, though, like legitimately garbage, or maybe because it didn't hit any of the parts. G.I. Joe. I'm going to bring that up.
Yeah.
So the first G.I. Joe movie was like, okay, I could see how this was based on G.I. Joe, but they got none of the spirit in it at all.
Nope.
And I really loathed that movie. And I thought, well, loathe is a little strong. I just did not like that movie at all. I don't think it did a good job of capturing the spirit that the sequel to that reboot adaptation did.
Absolutely agree, 100%.
I think the sequel actually did a better job of making me feel like, all right.
It did. It could have done better.
It could have done better, but it definitely hit the mark way closer.
But the reason it did better in my book, James, you jerk, is because it was closer to the cartoon show.
I got one.
Okay, right, go ahead. All right.
The Last Airbender.
Shut up. We don't talk about that one.
Oh, no. What you don't understand is it was a M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah.
The twist in this one was that it was terrible.
That was the twist of his last few. Oh,
you went in expecting a good movie.
That was me.
Yeah. So here's one where, even though I wouldn't say that, like, M. Night Shyamalan's The Last Airbender, in my mind, it's not because it moves too far from the source material that makes it bad. It's literally everything else. The stale acting, the whitewashing, the poor plotted out story, the inability to connect a coherent idea out of a 20 episode first season of stories. I mean, it's just awful. It's awful.
I have a point to make on this, but
it's also the unfortunate desire that, like, it attempts to give you all of the information of that entire season.
Oh, good.
By just saying, by like constantly being exposition. That's 90% of the dialogue is just exposition.
Yeah.
But to me, that's a case of, you know, other than all the other terrible things about the movie,
don't
it's a case of
don't
not
you dare.
being liberal and cutting what you need to cut.
No, you're wrong. Come on, James. Even you have to accept that. Listen, first of all, the reason why the things we hate is a harder conversation is because if a movie's just bad, it's going to be bad no matter what, whether or not it's a good adaptation or not. But, like, you're being really cheap and cheesy if you're saying that should M. Night Shyamalan have made The Last Airbender and taken more liberties with it, it would have had a better chance of being good.
I know.
You can eat it.
I know you say that, but so the Avatar The Last Airbender art book has a 2-page foreword written by M. Night Shyamalan. This is before the movie came out, but he had been announced that he was going to direct the movie because he's such a big fan of the series. And I encourage everyone to find that forward online and read it.
Buy the book. Find it online and read it.
Buy the art book, but you don't buy the art book to read the 2-page forward. You buy it to look at the beautiful art. It's incredible how much this 2-page forward understands the series and what brings such magic to it. I know you're going to see like, that's there's incredible. No way it could have had been a chance of being
it's
a better
incredible.
Movie.
I'll look out for
I'm
it.
I'm going to tell you 100%. M. Night Shyamalan, what he did doesn't resemble Avatar at all. But this man, at some point before he started that filmmaking process, had a love for this series and somewhere along the line looked like he might have had a vague idea what he was doing.
Yeah, James is actually right here. If you look up the way the film was made, most of the problems with the film were actually not from the director, but from corporate involvement.
I'm willing to accept that literally M. Night Shyamalan wasn't the problem, but I think the film's problem, at least a large part of it, is how much it varies from the source material. What I'm specifically saying, James, is that saying that only your original argument of, you know, take liberties, I don't think fixes this problem.
Well, I mean, don't take liberties with your cast.
It doesn't fix the problem. Also, I just want to say this podcast is, James is on record of idolizing M. Night Shyamalan and Michael Bay. So those are the two things you've announced officially on this podcast.
And Night Shyamalan's still pretty good.
I'm fine with both. I'm legitimately fine with both. They had some issues with both of their films, but not
no Transformers movies.
Ang Lee's Hulk was a problem, but
ooh, yeah,
low blow.
No, I could see that. Yeah. Now we're getting into the dark territory of superhero films, which Daredevil. Is really why most people are talking about this. Daredevil is an awkward adaptation, but then we get like the movies that are just not well done.
Yeah,
maybe let's talk about the grandfather of every reboot conversation on the internet for the last 5 or 10 years, Spider-Man.
Yep.
So I think another rule in reboots or remakes or whatever is distance from the last version. I don't think you're allowed to reboot something when it's within a certain amount of time from the, I don't know what that time is, maybe the lifespan of one of the actors. I don't know, but it seems like that makes it seem lazy and boring.
There's one thing I want to point out about Spider-Man and its many, many reboots, because I think it is often neglected and forgotten, is that Spider-Man, as a character, in the actual straight Marvel comics, was only in high school for a few years in the 60s. He has been a 30-year-old man for at least 30 years now. He's been in his 20s since 1970-something.
But he has never once acted like it.
Truly. I can agree with that. But where is he in all of these reboots? Where is he? He's always high school, and then the sequels maybe take him a little further. But it's always, we got to make him younger and younger when he hasn't been a kid in a million years. And we just keep doing the same story in all the reboots.
And it seems pretty clear that the reason for the reboots in the Spider-Man franchise are almost always corporate, right?
Yeah.
So there's either we can't get a Spider-Man movie made, which is like the first 50 years of the character's existence or whatever.
Yep.
And then there's the Tobey Maguire one goes off, and then there's problems with the filmmakers, they can't get a sequel out in time. So reboot, which seems a little too close to the last Tobey Maguire movie, and then another reboot when those movies don't do well financially. I do think business isn't a good exclusive reason to reboot.
Yeah.
You ridden the risk of annoying your fans.
I'm going to 100% agree, actually, because I just feel like I'm burnt out on this character. Mm-hmm. And not only that, I'm burnt out on him being in high school because I didn't grow up with him being in high school. Damn it. I'm sorry, but really I'm passionate about this.
Ow, why are you cussing?
I'm tired of it.
Oh, hang on there, son. I don't know if you could use that kind of language on the radios.
I'd love to touch on something really quickly that I think is actually going really well right now in reboot culture. Okay. It's movies to television. I have been loving some recent moves of movies to television as compared to where we're moving. You know, we're so used to moving a long form story and making it into a short form story, right. I.e. book to TV, Beverly TV Hill to movie. Movies. But the other way works great. I
wish I had one more example other than Beverly Hillbillies. My brain just farted, so now it just sounds like I said Beverly Hillbillies.
The Addams Family, which is actually a really good...
Yeah, it was anything other than just hanging out there with the Beverly Hillbillies. Scott, all right, go on.
But
yeah, those were all the I really liked, a decade ago or
yeah,
two
but
decades.
In recent history, even though it only got one season, I really liked Limitless, which was kind of an okay movie that turned into a really fun TV show. I loved, the adaption of Teen Wolf on MTV, even though it was super weird and teen drama-y.
It wasn't this
comedy of, whatever with Michael J. Fox.
See, at that point, why aren't you just making a new thing? You're just taking the title literally.
Werewolf.
If it's a good title, why not?
Because it's a different thing.
Yeah. Because there are those of us who really like Teen Wolf the movie, and we were like, what's the point of this? This is just stupid.
To me, there's nothing special about Teen Wolf the movie. It's a fine movie, but...
If there's
nothing special about Teen Wolf the movie, then why take the name?
Well, but...
Do you think Teen Wolf was the first... movie with a teenage werewolf?
No, that was
I Was a Teenage Werewolf starring Michael Landon.
There you go.
And it was awesome.
But yeah, the point is, I'm saying that moving these short form stories and expanding on them is a really great trend in reboots.
The Buffy model.
Yeah.
Or
the Buffy model.
Or
exactly.
Actually going further back, the MASH model.
MASH 2,
also
another
great example. Great example. And in both those cases, well, no, not really. In the Buffy example, at least the creative force behind Buffy, wanted to make that transition over. Teen Wolf, I want to yell at you about I think it's a great, it could be a great show, but it just seems weird.
A good show.
Really weird to do this and kind of manipulative. And I want to do that for something you love. And I'm going to think about something you love. Oh, Full Metal Alchemist. My new TV show about chemistry. I'm making it. Screw you, James.
James, I'm going to tell you right now an example where that doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure there are examples where it doesn't.
Yeah. Teen Wolf.
Riverdale.
No.
Nope.
No.
You're wrong. That's awesome.
But it's also not a direct translation. That's long form storytelling.
Yeah, because Archie Comics, there's not a movie for Archie.
Yeah.
Like,
folks, come on.
It's from a comic that's lasted like a million years.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, what was Pleasantville was kind of
Pleasantville.
I didn't see we were talking about Psycho a lot. I didn't see a lot of Bates Motel. I saw part of it and it seemed pretty good.
Oh. Bates Motel, that's a great example.
Yeah. I can't argue it because I haven't...
I don't understand it, but it seems enjoyable.
No, from what I've seen of it, it's very good. And a lot of people like that
show that's got Hannibal the Cannibal in it a lot. I haven't seen it either.
Hannibal?
I loved Brian Fuller's adaption of Hannibal because it takes the books and the movies and collaborates all of the good ideas from these things and removes all of the terrible ideas. And boy, are there a lot of terrible ideas in the Hannibal
mythos.
But there's a lot of great stuff in there too, and that's really what Brian Fuller focuses on.
Silence of the Lambs is such a troubled movie for me. There's good stuff and then bad stuff.
I'm so disappointed that we can't come up with an example for James.
To ruin me? They're going to make a terrible Full Metal Alchemist movie. That's happening.
Yeah, but
the live action
specifically.
Do we know it's going to be bad?
I mean, I don't have high hopes.
That's fair.
And we could argue the Death Note series.
No, we don't talk about that. No.
We also don't know what it looks like yet. You know?
I've seen enough, I think.
Yeah, we could make an argument. I don't really want to.
I'm comfortable making that judgment call.
Yeah, I feel like you make a big mistake. You take a lot of chances. I think the reason why Teen Wolf may work is because the two audiences for them, the people who like the campy 80s film, the people who like the
teenage
drama, yeah,
drama are so different that there's really no cross filtering. No one's going to get really upset at each other because it's not like they're really going to care. Like I love Teen Wolf the movie, and right. I keep forgetting Teen Wolf the show exists. It's not going to bother me because I never really expected there to be a Teen Wolf series other than the animated Teen Wolf series.
Yes. Which right. was a masterpiece.
Was a masterpiece. But, like, I do think that if you run the risk of being a douchebag filmmaker, which James clearly aspires to be,
we've made
by
this conclusion.
Just grabbing titles that sound cool and saying, I'm going to make this.
I don't...
If I remember correctly, there was a Steel Magnolias series that
there
bombed.
There was, yeah.
You also have to be careful, too, though. A lot of times, you don't have, as a filmmaker, as a person, I mean, maybe that's not the example with maybe Michael Bay or something like that, but... Sometimes you are offered a job to remake this property.
Yeah.
And then you do it. And you're going to do it. If I'm in that position, I'm going to do it in a way that I think is interesting and powerful.
Right.
And not slave myself to the material. I'm not big on campy 80s movies, so I probably would have made Teen Wolf much closer to Buffy, mm-hmm. which is what we got. You know?
Well, in that case, I blame the director less than the producers
yeah.
who chose that director.
We're not specifying anybody. Despite the M. Night Shyamalan and the Michael Bay jokes, we know that there are bigger reasons, or whoever the hell was involved in Spider-Man's constant reboots. We get it.
By the way,
But we're just saying those people are evil, and you aspire to be them. All right, we're running a little long, but I think, you know, we had an interesting conversation, and we've come up with some basic rules for you aspiring filmmakers and screenwriters and douchebags like James to follow. And what are those rules?
You should not be a slave to the source material, obviously, James.
But still respect it.
Right, exactly. Right. Try to do something new, but honor the source of what you've originally working with.
Yep. So essentially what we've decided here, ladies and gentlemen, is to make sure that you have your cake and eat it too.
Also, make a good movie. Yeah. That's probably like number one.
Definitely make sure you set out to make a good movie. Don't be like Michael Bay and set out to just make a movie where you make money.
And don't just set out to make a good movie. Do it.
Because I'm pretty sure, like, let's be honest with ourselves. Most people, with the exception of maybe Uwe Boll, like, set out to make a good movie. And like, so, you know, but don't just set out, do it.
I'm not happy with the fact that we called out two filmmakers at the very end and said, F*** you filmmakers,
you
two assholes.
I'm very comfortable saying
F*** you Michael Bay any day of the week.
And to same be fair, thing with Uwe Boll.
Uwe Boll made films so that he could cash in on German tax credits.
Awesome.
That was this is literally
so
history.
It's springtime for Hitler, but we don't bring up Hitler because it's German.
Exactly.
Got it. We probably should cut that out of the podcast. All right, we're good.
Good night, everybody.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.